Good morning. I'm very excited about the fact that I get to speak at a huge auditorium. I was hoping that they would give me one of the little small classrooms to where it would look like our crowd was a lot larger. I'm familiar with those types of dynamics. The church where I used to preach, we had standing room only. And so everybody thought we had one of the largest churches in the city. And I said, no, it's just a smaller auditorium and make us look so huge and so packed. And then we decided to create another problem, and we went to a second service, and then they thought we were a mega church. So if we took that whole group to another congregation, we would be a lot smaller. But welcome. Let me introduce myself. I'm Billy Curl. To give you a little bit of history. I was born in Texas born and raised on a farm in Texas, and went to college at Southwestern Christian College in Terrell, Texas, and also to Abilene Christian University, graduated in 1964. Got married, and my wife and I, when I graduated from Abilene, my wife and I immediately left the country. I guess I don't want to do this. And went to Africa as missionaries. We lived in, see if I can make this work a little bit better. I think I did it. We lived in Ethiopia for 6 years. And the interesting part is that when I was in junior college, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so I just said, I want to study law. And one of the teachers, one of the professors there said, no, you don't want to do that. And this is in the 60s when they told me, you don't want to be a lawyer because lawyers lie. And I said, okay. And I was taught early in life to obey your elders. So I changed, and I didn't know what else I wanted to do. So I took a speech class and did very well in that class. So I wanted to be a speech teacher. And one of the professors says, no, you don't want to be a speech teacher because after a few years, the school system will not have speech classes. So you will not be able to teach. So I said, okay. And I said, well, I don't have a clue what I want to do. And he said, well, why don't you just go into speech therapy? I had no clue what speech therapy was. And when I transferred to Abilene Christian, I just put down speech therapy and became a speech and language therapist. Graduated. And in that process of graduating with a degree in speech and language, I worked a lot with deaf people. And the semester before I graduated, I received a call or a letter from a church in San Francisco saying that we know you have this experience and that you have this background and you have this education. We're looking for somebody to take charge of a deaf education program in Africa, and we would like for you to do it. And there were some perks that came along with that. And some of the perks was, I wasn't married at the time, so we want somebody who's married, and we understand that you're going to get married. You're going to get married at the end of right after you graduate. But if you move your weighted up, we'll pay for it. And not only will we pay for it, we'll pay for your honeymoon. And so my wife holds this against me today because she said, I never proposed. She said, I came over to her house and said, I just got this letter saying that I have to be married to go to Africa. And if you want to go to Africa, come on, let's go get married. And she said, that's what I did. And she just got up and said, okay, let's go. And went to Africa. And my Lord, in the 60s, 1964, and had an opportunity to live there for 6 years. And we still operate a mission program there. We're supporting 40. It's really a very productive thing. And we built a school in the country and has 800 students, and we're still operating that school. And we'll be doing that for the next 2 to 3 years. I have about 800 students, and in that province, it's the number one school of all the schools in the whole area. Came back to the States in 1970 and decided I wanted to go back into my profession as a speech therapist. And I did that worked in a church in Long Beach for about 1 year, and then got called to a church in Los Angeles a year later in 1971. Called the Crenshaw Church in Los Angeles, if anybody's familiar with the Crenshaw District. Started working there in 1971, as well as being a therapist. And so I got tired of being a therapist. I thought that was going to be my profession. I did that because somebody else told me that's what I ought to do. But I ultimately wanted to be a preacher. And so God had to have the final say in everything that I did. And after 10 years, I resigned as a therapist in the school district and became a full-time minister. Listen to this. Those of you who are preachers, listen to this. I was making $17,500 a year for 10 months in teaching. I was making $7,500 as a preacher, a small church, about 50 members. And so the elders came to me and said, we would like for you to come full time. And so I added up all of the income, and then and it was $30,000+. In the 60s, that wasn't too bad. Okay, I could still buy a house and all of that. By the way, I bought a house, and I still live in the same house and that I bought back in the 70s. And they said, we want to make you an offer. We would like for you to come full time. And I had benefits, I had medical, I had all of that, but I was just tired. And so they made me an offer. They said, we'll give you $24,000 and nothing else. No benefits. You have to do your own. And that meant a major cut in salary, a major cut in all of that. And so in about 3 seconds, I made a decision. I said, okay, and did it. I suffered for a year. My wife quit her job. She was a nurse. And all of a sudden, we starved for about a year. But I said, this is what I really want to do. This is where I want to go. This is how I want to carry on. We started from 50 people. And then I'm going to get to the lesson. I see you got your pens and paper out and your notes and all of that. And so we moved from that, to make a long story short, moved from about 50. Well, let me give you some other background. The church where I was preaching was a part of the old Pepperdine campus that was in Los Angeles, if some of you remember. And that church was made up of faculty and some of the administrators and some of the communities. So it was designed to be a total integrated church. It was to be, it was designed that way. And most of the people from the Vermont campus of Pepperdine was made up the body of that church. Then when Malibu opened, 95% of all of those people moved out here. Our church went from 110 to 120 down to less than 50. We had no clue what we were going to do. Will it close up? What should we do? And that's when I said, let's see what the Lord has for us. And so we took the remaining 50 and just stayed there and started loving each other and started just worshiping together. And people just started dropping in. And so today we have 624 members of that church. And so that makes, and so I stayed there until 2 years ago. And I retired 2 years ago. I was talking to my brother here about retirement. It's just not doing anything. You know, you got to do something. And I'm not bored yet. But what I do is I get to watch Gunsmoke at 10 o'clock every morning. And I find that so exciting that I get to do that. And what I'd like to do is to Isaiah chapter 40 is a passage of, and remember, been a preacher for, I was there for 42 years at this one church. And so I get into a preacher mode. And if you have something that you would have to, that you would like to contribute to this particular segment, just raise your hand and do that. Because once I get going, I'll close my eyes and I'll just start throwing things out there. And so if you would like to have some comments or things like that, feel free to do so. Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 30 and verse 31. Two verses that I really like to hang my hat on that I get great joy out of. Let me read these, if you don't mind. It says, though youth grow weary and tired, and vigorous young men stumble badly, yet those who wait for the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. Over my career of 50 years, I've gotten really tired. I can now look back on my career, on my life, on my work, and I've seen where the evil one, I can see where angels of darkness have come into my life and tried to get me to quit and to stop. And the methods that were being used by the devil, and that's what I like. I like to use the word devil rather than the word Satan. I was taught early in life about the devil, not about Satan. They are synonymous. It's the same way. I just like the word devil better. My mother, God bless her, lived to be 102, passed away several years ago, 10 years ago. And she would always talk to us about the devil. And then when we started acting up, she would say things like, don't let the devil get into you. And then when we really did, she would get her belt and says, now I'm going to have to get rid of the devil. And so she used the belt to get rid of the devil out of us. And so that's how I got used to the word devil rather than the word Satan. And so I recognize that the devil has a way of getting to you and letting you know that he is going to be ever present. And the way in which he dealt with me was to make me tired, to put some obstacles in my way that would make me tired. And when you get tired, a lot of other things would happen. And I'm sure that many of you have gotten tired at one time or another. The word tired is also synonymous with the word weary. Grow weary, and I get tired in body. I get tired in spirit, and sometimes my strength is exhausted. My determination is shot. Sometimes I get irritated in life, and I get irritated with life. And sometimes I get fed up. I get fed up with everything around me, especially people. I would just get tired of people around me. And the only joy, and I'm getting ahead of myself, but the only joy that I would have is on a Sunday morning, everybody at the Crenshaw Church, except just a few who could not, would dress up and come to worship. And they would put on their game face. They would look good. They would act good. I even knew who the bad people were. But on Sunday morning, they became good people. And they would smile. And that was the joyous occasion that I would have that would give me some strength, is doing worship service. And the 20 minutes to 30 minutes prior to worship service, when we were all there just talking to everybody, and all is forgiven, everything is peaches and cream, apple pie and ice cream, all of that takes place with me on Sunday morning. I want to know, and you can raise your hand if you like to. Anybody here ever felt like that? You just get tired, and you just get a little down and say, I just don't want to do this. And I just wanted to. And I know you've heard this, told his mother, I don't want to go to church today. I'm tired. And I want to stay in bed. And mother came and said, well, you got to get up. We got to go to church. I don't want to go. The people down at church don't like me. And the people down at church, I don't like them. And so she said, but you got to go. And he said, well, give me one good reason why I should go to church this morning. And she said, you're the preacher. And so even though you all feel that way, there are sometimes when the preachers just don't want to get up and go and preach, or even show up and to hang out with other good people. And I read this story from where I got most of my information about a man who said he was in his car, and somebody asked the question, are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? And they said, if you were, you need to try some Be Alive Royal Jelly. Be Alive is spelled B-E-E, Be Alive Royal Jelly. Well, who isn't tired? Who doesn't get tired of being sick and tired and being sick and tired? But I'm not sure that this royal jelly from bees will help. In fact, I'm not sure how anyone ever came with the idea to try something like that to get over being tired. It's like a sales pitch. And why we must face the reality that all of us must deal with weariness, there's hope from the scriptures of a deeper reality in which we can tap into the inexhaustible strength of God. And so the text that I read, the passage that I read, reveals that although we get tired, there's a source of strength for those who trust and those who wait in the Lord. My parents had 12 children. There were 5 boys, and I'm number 4 from the bottom. My father and mother and several of my siblings are all gone. But I had a brother. I had a brother who was 5 years younger than me. We all left the farm and moved to other places to do other things. And my brother, the baby boy of the family, decided after going to the military that he wanted to come back home and live near his parents. And now, when I was 28, I weighed 135 pounds. So don't judge me by how I am going to describe what happened years ago. I put on a little bit of weight and a little bit bigger now than I used to be. But my brother owned a chicken farm down in East Texas, and my father gave him 40 acres of land, and he went to the feds and borrowed the money and set up this fabulous business and doing very well. 80,000 chickens every 7 to 9 weeks that he would produce for Foster Farm, or there's another company I can't think of their company. And so I'm living here in California. He's in East Texas. So every year in November, I would go see my mother and during Thanksgiving. And then he would take me in his pickup truck, and he would drive me all around to view the farm that he owned and that he lived. And my father got very ill with prostate cancer, and a very strong man who went from 180 pounds down to 100 pounds. And he sat down and could not walk anymore. And so my brother would go every day, come up to his house, walk in, pick up my father like a baby, and walk him outside, put him in the truck, and drive him around the farm to see the cattle and to see all of that. Drive him back, get out, walk on the other side, pick up his father, my father, walk him back in the house and sit him down in the chair. That was my father's outing. But whenever I would go home, he would take me in. We'd have this big fence around the house, around the land, and he'd drive up, and I'd open the door to get out and to open the gate. And he said, "No, I'll do it because I'm much stronger than you." My brother was my height, weighed about 240 pounds. He could bench press 400 pounds. He was a monster of strength. And this is my baby brother who said, "I'm going to take care of you because I'm stronger than you." And I'll never forget that no matter who it is, if they're stronger than you, they will have been taught and they'll learn to take care of somebody who is weaker than they are. Because the gates that we had that would put us in inside the land was not just a gate that would swing open. It was a wire gate, and they built a thing around it, and you had to pull it to take the, what do you call that? The little hoop off the top. And so you had to pull this thing, and he just assumed that I did not have the strength to do that. And I allowed him to assume that so that he could open this gate. That's the way I look at my relationship with God, that I am not strong enough to maneuver in this world. I just really can't make it. And I need somebody to help me along the way. So I look for people, and then I find that there are people, even elders in the church, deacons in the church, ministers in the church. I have even found that some of them are not able to help me in my walk with God. And so Isaiah, in this passage, is pointing us to two realities. One is an obvious reality, and that is, it is the reality that we all grow weary. I thought my father was one of the strongest men that I ever met. He was a powerful man, and I would only get to see him after coming to California once a year. And I didn't realize that my father was sick until 1 year I went home, and there he was sitting in the chair, had lost all this weight. And the way I looked at him was from this giant of a man to this very weak person. Broke my heart. And then that's when I knew that one day I'm going to be like that. And so getting weaker and weaker, did not realize that I was going to be that, having those aches and pains. And I don't know when it happened. I grew up, I wasn't a fast runner. I wasn't a sprinter. Anybody would know anything about athletics. I couldn't do a 100-yard dash. I couldn't do the 100 meters. I couldn't do all of that. But let me tell you what I could do. I could run all day. And that was my gift. I could run a mile and beat everybody. But I couldn't do 100 yards. I couldn't do 100 meters. I couldn't do that. But just show me where the goal is and then double it. And I could beat everybody. And so I then came to the conclusion later on in life that I couldn't even go half that distance now. So I had to realize that I get tired. To realize that I just can't get up in the morning. I have this saying, when I wake up in the morning, my mother would get up early in the morning and make breakfast. And I always use the phrase, I'd wake up in the morning to the smell of biscuits and bacon. And I'd get up and run. I'd run to the kitchen and I would sit there. We didn't have a dining room. We were so poor. We had a kitchen and the stove and the table. Everything was in one room. And I would run. And she would make me go wash my face and clean up and then come back. I never forget that every morning when I wake up, I never think about what I was supposed to do. I'd run to the kitchen. Now, I wake up and I lay there for a minute. And I said, are you awake? And then I find out, then I'll call my name. And if I say, Billy, oh, you are awake. And I can't just get up. So what I'll do, and I'll call my name and I'll say, thank you. I know who I am. I can't get up quickly, so I roll over. And when I roll over, I say, thank you. And then I just can't jump up. So I sit on the side of the bed. Now, you don't have to agree with me, but I know that some of you go through this. I rub, you know, get the circulation going in my legs. And when I get the circulation going, I'll stand up. I'll say thank you. And then I'll walk to the kitchen. I walk to the dining room, and instead of looking for the biscuits and bacon, I have to go and help my wife cook it. I give thanks every day for just waking up in the morning that I took for granted when I was a child. Y'all still with me, all right? The other one, other deep reality is that we act as people of faith. That trusting in and expectantly waiting on the Lord, we find inexhaustible strength. The real question is, which reality are we really willing to settle for? I think my lecture ends in 15 minutes. I think so, and so I have notes. And in my notes, I put them on pages. And so I'm just halfway page one. So I need to speed up a little bit and so that I can get through this before my my time is up. In verse 30 of Isaiah 40, it says, though youth grow weary and tired and vigorous young men stumble badly, what is being spoken by Isaiah is the obvious. At least it's obvious to some of us. It is the truth that we are all destined to grow weary. Perhaps the only category of individuals for which this truth is obvious is not obvious, really, is young people. When I was young, I never thought I was going to get old. When I was really young, I never thought that I was going to have back problems. I was going to have knee problems. And I made a mistake. I parked down on the street as you go down toward the field house, and I had to walk up those stairs. And I looked around, and I was 90% up. And then I saw somebody that knew me. And so I stopped, and I did this whole so that he wouldn't see me exhausted. So I rested and took some deep breaths. So when he came with me, he was walking up, and I found out that I didn't have to put on a front because he was struggling with the same problem. And one of the things that we have to realize is that there are other people who are struggling with the same issues that we have. When I lived in Ethiopia, it was a high elevation. It was, 9,000 feet above sea level or more somewhere. And it took me at least 3 months to get acclimated to the thin air. And so whenever I go back, I wait a few days just to get myself acclimated. One of the things that we must realize and recognize is what makes us tired. Is it physical? And then we also have to recognize what spiritual things that make us tired. Working at the church for the 40 years at this one church, actually 42 years, there were several things that made me tired. Some of the people who I had preached to for so many years still sitting in their own previous problems, never moved. Others who moved out and never really grew. And then there was another generation that came in, and it made it a whole lot better. That caused me to renew my strength, renew my energy, because I would see new people coming in and taking on the Lord, and their faith seemed to be increasing. Now, if you have any questions or any comments, I stop. Anyone? If not, I'll just keep going because I got 10 minutes left. When we become weary, we are defenseless against the enemy. When we become weary, the strong one can destroy us. How many of you remember Muhammad Ali and George Foreman had a fight in, I think it was in Africa, it was. I'm trying to think of the country. And do you realize what Muhammad Ali did? He got in the corner and he let George Foreman all the way through, he just covered himself up. And George Foreman just tried to beat him up. And he was just, and then after so many rounds, Muhammad Ali said, he's now tired. I got it. And Muhammad Ali won because he let the other man get tired first. He just covered up. And he made sure that he was defensive. George Foreman couldn't get in and hit him in vulnerable spots. He lost the fight because he overexerted himself and did not make any progress. And Muhammad Ali won because the other man got tired. And when you get tired, we're like a weary sheep to the wolf. The devil, the enemy of our souls, is like the wolf, waits for the weary straggler to fall behind the flock, and then he pounces upon his easy prey. Remember I said that I love Westerns? And I saw this one movie where the posse was after this one man, and they were coming up into the hills, and the man had lost his horse, and he was climbing up on the rocks, and he knew that they were going to catch him. So what he did is he got on the rock, and as the posse came through, he waited until the last man of the posse came by, and he jumped on the back of the horse, knocked the man out, and got his horse and turned around and went in the opposite direction. The others were concentrated on going forward that they didn't look back to see that they had been deceived. And this last man in the row, and that's what the wolf does. We used to go on these safaris and you could watch the lion. He waits to get the one that he thinks is most vulnerable. The devil doesn't go after groups. The devil goes after people, goes after one person at a time. And if you've been in a church a long time, you can spot them. You can say, ha, the devil got that one. And so you have to reassert yourself in that. So the scripture is filled with examples which proves this point. Deuteronomy chapter 25. And verse 17 and verse 18, listen to what happened there. Remember what Amalek did to you along the way when you came out of Egypt, how he met you along the way and attacked among you all the stragglers at your rear when you were faint and weary and he did not fear God. Amalek attack on Israel is a prime example of the devil's attack on Christians who go weary. Another passage, if you're writing this down, is 2 Samuel chapter 17, verse 1 and 2, which reads this way, and forgive me if I mispronounce this word. Furthermore, Ahithophel said to Absalom, please let me choose 12,000 men that I may arise and pursue David tonight. I will come upon him while he is weary and exhausted and will terrify him so that all the people who are with him will flee. Then I will strike down the king alone. Here, and Ahithophel's offer to Absalom was to attack David while David was tired, while David was exhausted, is also indicative of the devil's strategy. When we become tired, we're defenseless against the enemy. We have a lady at our church who is in her late 90s now. When I first started there, she was one of my biggest supporters. She was a PhD nurse, worked for LAUSD, the top nurse in the Los Angeles School District. And all the nurses, she was in charge of all of that. And one Sunday, after I'd been there for a while, she came up to me and says, Brother Curl, it's time for you to take off. I said, what do you mean take off? She said, you're going to get tired, and you're going to get frustrated, and you're going to get upset at us. So you need to take off. And somehow that struck a chord with me. You need to take a week off. You need to take a few days off. And I did that, and I came back with a renewed energy. And when I came back, she said, I want a copy of your sermon. And so I had it all written out. I'm not so good without writing everything down. And so I wrote it all down and gave it to her, and she said, oh, you're not tired anymore. I can tell by your message. You're tired. You're rested. And every Sunday, you got four more weeks. You got to take off every 5 weeks. You got to take off and you got to get renewed. And I'll never forget that lady. And at age 90, her driver's license expired. And she said, I don't have to take the driver's test, but I have to take the written test. And I'm going to show them. And she walked in on her crutches, sat down there, and made 100 on her test. I got my driver's license. Here is a 90-plus-year-old lady who said, the greatest joy that I have is that I passed the driving test. And I thought that was amazing. I thought the greatest joy I would get is winning that million-billion-dollar lottery. But since I didn't buy the ticket, I couldn't win. And I said, oh, she was so overjoyed with passing the driver's test. I looked, my driver's license expired. And I had to go down and take the test. Do you realize I failed the first time? And I got so nervous, I didn't know what to do. And I said, wait a minute. Wait. I'm not supposed to fail this test. And I look back, I was so tired and I was so nervous that I said, take hold of yourself. Get yourself together. Go pray. I turned around and I asked the lady, how many chances do I have before I have to start all over? She said, you have three. You can take the test a second time. The second time, I just said, look, I know what I'm doing. I can do this. Took a deep breath after walking up those stairs, and I passed. The key is to relax in your relationship with God. And enjoy God. Don't just serve him. Enjoy him. And it's real. We're weary. Let me quickly. We're weary. We also, when we are tired, we lose our proper perspective. Read Genesis chapter 25 and verses 29 to verse 24. Weariness and tiredness makes you more attentive to your physical and emotional needs than your spiritual needs. Because of this exhaustion, Esau lost his proper perspective, and so can we. He forgot what was really important and missed out on the blessing of God when he sold his birthright. Things are not always as they seem. A weary man looks through physical eyes. Well, what we need is spiritual vision. The last thing I'm going to do is when we go weary, we are also susceptible to despair and depression. And while the scriptures are full of examples of this, we can also know from our own experiences, it's easy for a tired person to want to throw up their hands and quit. It's easy to be negative and critical when you're tired. It's so easy to feel like everybody's against you when you're tired. It's also easy to feel sorry for yourself when you're tired. You become like the man who had both an identity crisis and an energy crisis. He didn't know who he was, and he was too tired to find out. The last one is the vitality of a waiting saint. Verse 31, those who wait on the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. And they will walk and not become weary. What does it mean to wait on the Lord? Literally, the word in the Hebrew has the connotation of to bind or to braid. The idea of binding ourselves or braiding ourselves together with the Lord. In fact, we wait upon the Lord. To wait upon the Lord may be the Old Testament equivalent of believing in the Lord Jesus. Waiting on the Lord means that we exercise faith in him. To wait on the Lord means that we seek his face earnestly, that we wait patiently and expectantly. I thank you very much for being a part of this, and I look forward to doing it again next year. God bless you. Thank you much. Mm-hmm.